Okay, let's open this with a word of prayer. Father, we just thank you so much for this day, and I just pray that you'll bless the words that come out of my mouth. May they be your words and not mine. And if they are mine, that they fall to the ground and be as worthless dust. I pray this in Yeshua's name. Amen. Okay, this Torah portion we've gone over several times, and I just was praying about this. And I've seen a major theme in the words of certain areas of this Torah portion about Jacob being cast into an evil light and Esau still being cast in a good light. So part of this is going to be a little bit of rehash of what we've already talked about. And the other part is going to be talking about these definitions of the words that they chose to define what we see today. Jacob thought it was all over, and his very life hung in the balance. Esau threatened to kill him. Isn't it just like the enemy, that if he can't gain victory one way, he always tries to kill those who are serving Yahweh? And this is important because as we approach the end of days, the enemy is going to resort to the same tactics. He's going to try to kill us, and Yahweh's going to protect his bride in the wilderness. This brings us to another point that if Jacob gained a birthright and a blessing through deceit, why would Yahweh make a promise with Jacob? Yahweh has nothing to do with darkness or evil other than he instigates and sets everything up to see what we're going to do. He already knows in advance what we're going to do, whether it be good or bad. As he told Laban later on, you don't speak good or bad of Jacob. He could have blessed him, but Yahweh forbid it everything that would come out of his mouth because eventually that would come against Jacob. So considering this, wouldn't that mean that he would be siding with the enemy if he was saying that Jacob, even in his deceit, was righteous? It would say that he deceived his father, his brother, anybody that was associated with him, including Laban. But and yet, if you see this, as we go through this Torah portion, that he did not deceive Laban. Laban deceived Jacob. And certain commentaries I read say that Jacob was recipient of the deceit through Laban because of what he did with his father and with his brother. But in actuality, I believe this all goes back to this, is that he was missed, the translation of the words were mishandled yet again in the scriptures. I've seen many things this week in different areas where we see this over and over again from Genesis all the way to Revelation where words are purposely mishandled to suit the translators. This is not a translation. This is interpretation using what man has decided is what they want to say and present. So they purposely made Jacob to be like a scapegoat and say, oh, it's Jacob's fault. And this is why we're in this mess. Even today, we have the descendants of Esau and the descendants of Jacob at odds with each other because of this mistranslation and saying that Jacob is evil and Esau was a victim. And yet he wasn't the victim. He could care less about the birthright. In fact, he sold it for a pottage, a consolation dish for Isaac. Because his father had just died, and this is where Esau could have taken the first birth blessing, and he decided that it wasn't worth it. He decided that it would rather be out in the field and doing things that he knew he shouldn't have done. He killed the king of Babylon, and he didn't even take his place, because the rules at that time was if you kill the king, you assume the throne. And he fled from them thinking that he was going to be murdered by the people that were coming after him, and there was nobody chasing him. Isn't it like Yahweh to make you fear things that are not even there? So consider the Canaanites who are the descendants of Ham, who was not entitled to the land. So that's where we're at when the children of Israel come out of Egypt and they go into the land and they're going to take back what was rightfully theirs that was Shem's descendants. So because of this, they weren't entitled to it And yet they took it away from Shem's descendants, and Yahweh was restoring through the children of Shem, namely Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Yahweh is sovereign, and he and his promises will never fail. He promised it to Shem's descendants, the land, and yet the children of Ham are the ones who possessed it. So we are faced with this quandary. So what do we do with this? Are we to believe that the descendants of Ham are rightful heirs to this area where we're at today, or is it the children of Shem? And because of the mistranslation or the misinterpretation of these words, we come away with thinking that, well, maybe it's not really belonging to Jacob, and it really belongs to Esau. Yahweh is sovereign in all his promises, and he never fails in anything that he says. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He is not a man that he should lie. Often we are painted a picture of the way the world sees God, which goes to the point to where we're at today, is that, oh, the God of the Old Testament is a mean, vengeful God. And the God of the New Testament is a loving, benevolent God who only cares about us and making sure that our wants and our desires are met. So what we have then is a two gods versus one God, who says in Numbers chapter 6 that he is one God, one Elohim. He's not two gods. There's no two gods. There's only one. All right. So there seems to be a problem. And it's either God is a liar or Yahweh is a liar, or this is another example of the translators mishandling the text. I'll try to explain this. These people place their needs of those before themselves, In other words, they put themselves before what is actually there. They put their doctrines in place of what the scriptures really say. They don't let the scriptures say what they say, and they interpret for us what they want you to know. And usually that's bad news. Jacob was fleeing from Esau. It is much the same way the bride would be fleeing to the king, and he will save them. The bride is going to flee away from Esau. They're going to gather together in a place that has been designated by them in the wilderness. But if we believe what is being handed down to us over the generations, that Jacob is unrighteous, and yet God blessed him through the promises that he gave him, he's unrighteous, and Esau is a victim. So in addition, note here is there are two places in the scripture where Yahweh says in Malachi chapter 1, verses 2 through 3, I have loved you, says Yahweh, but you say, how have you loved us? Was not Esau Jacob's brother, declares Yahweh? I've loved Jacob, but I hated Esau. I turned Esau's mountain into a desolate place, and I turned the territory that he possessed over to the wild jackals. He made it a desolation. In Romans chapter 9, verses 11 through 15, even before the twins were born, it's Jacob and Esau, or did anything good or bad in order that God's purpose in election might continue, not by works, but because of him who calls us. It is said to her, the older will serve the younger, just as it's written, Jacob I loved, but Esau I hated. What will we say then? Does this mean that God is unjust? Absolutely not. For God says to Moses, I will show mercy to whom I will show mercy, and I have compassion on whom I have compassion. So if Jacob is a liar and a deceiver, then how is the promise went through Jacob and not Esau? In Romans 9:15 says, God said to Moses, I will show mercy to whom I will show mercy, and I have compassion on whom I will show compassion. According to Genesis 3, we see the first mention of this word deceive. It says, and Yahweh said to the woman, what is this thou hast done? And the woman said, the serpent beguiled me, and I did eat. This word beguile is that word nakash for serpent. And yet, it's related to this word for deceit, which is nasa. It means to beguile, to be deceived, utterly, infinitely. It's a deception. The serpent deceived Eve, where Adam just clearly just took of it because whatever reason he chose, he decided that God wasn't righteous and he ate of the fruit himself, but where Eve was deceived. So many say that this, when we're looking at the what the word actually means for deception is a nun, a shin, and an aleph. So in the nun, it means loyalty, soul, apparition. And the shin represents divine power, but also it also represents corruption. So it's kind of a two different points on the same letter or the word. And Aleph is the one, God, one, unique, eternal. But Aleph also means a strong leader. It also means that. So we could say that the soul of the one that deceived is corrupted based on the word itself. The word that is mistranslated about Jacob is a deceiver in Genesis 27:35. And he said, thy brother came with subtlety and had taken away thy blessing. This word subtlety is the word mirma, which means deceit and treachery. This is what Isaac said about Jacob in the sense of deceiving. It's a feminine word. It's kind of odd in this text, but this is how it was written. So this is the word mirma, which has a mem and a resh and a mem and a hey. It's the revealed and hidden is the mem, the choice between greatness and degradation. Again, it's a double meaning of the same word. And well, resh also is a picture of a man thinking. He gets to decide between good and evil. This is what happened at the garden. So back to the mem is revealed and hidden. The things that were revealed will be, the things that were hidden are going to be revealed. And again, it's between divinity and distinction and specificity. It is not the same word in Genesis 3 for deceit. In fact, it's closer to being cunning, as Esau was a cunning hunter. Which comes to mind is that this word that's talking about Esau as being cunning, it's mentioned over 900 times in the scriptures. This is the word that's used there. But in this case, in a very few instances, that means cunning. But the rest of it means it's subtlety or skillfully, a skillful hunter, which more aptly is a good translation for that instead of being cunning. But in the same sense, when Isaac was talking about Jacob, he was being cunning in the way he approached Isaac. He was using the same type of tactics as Esau going out and hunt a deer. And here it's portraying Jacob as being cunning, not manipulative, but skillful in what he was saying to Isaac, his father, so he wouldn't be caught in this ruse that his mother put him up to. It's a primitive, the rama, which is the word here, is a primitive root to hurl, specifically to shoot, figuratively, or to delude or betray as a cause to fall. Beguile, betray, which also is deceit. The man carrying, deceive, to throw in the derision. In Genesis 31:7, and your father has deceived me and changed my wages 10 times. This is Jacob talking about Laban, talking to his wives. So that he changed him, he deceived him. He said that, oh, we're going to give you Rachel for a wife. And then he turned around and the men of that time, according to Jasher, was saying something about Leah, Leah, Leah. They deceived Jacob knowingly. And Laban was part of this whole thing. They weren't going to give him Rachel. They were going to give him Leah. And that it says about Leah, she had beautiful eyes, but her body was not very becoming to most men. So they wanted her to be married instead of Rachel. So this word for deceive here is the word hathal. It's to mock, kind of like what happened. The men were mocking Jacob, saying, we're going to trick you. We're going to deceive you. Kind of like what Esau did. It's a primitive root to deride, by implication, to cheat, to deal deceitfully. It's like weights and measures. When we say that we're going to pay and we don't pay, or they just said, oh, it's worth this much, and it's actually they sold to us for this much. They cheat us. It's done in certain cultures and where we're at today, where they say, oh, for the person that is a native born, we're going to charge this much. And for the one who's a foreigner, we're going to charge, oh, double. Why not? They had the money. It's the same idea. It says not to use unjust weights and measurements, because if we do that, we're deceit. Then we're in league with Esau. And Esau is a deceiver. He could care less about his birthright. Never mind. He didn't want even, he wanted the firstborn blessing because he wanted all the benefits, but none of the responsibility. He wanted Jacob to bear the responsibility of being the firstborn. Even though Jacob wasn't the firstborn naturally, God chose him over Esau. It says many times that Esau I hated, but Jacob I loved. Because why? Jacob was a man after his heart. He served him diligently day and night. He was, it says he was a tent dweller, but it meant that he was one that was not a wild man like Esau, but he was a mild man. He was after serving God with all of his heart and soul and mind. And he continued that throughout his rest of his life. If he was a deceiver, then that deceiving tactic would continue on even to the day he died. But he was not a deceiver. He was using what he had available to him. He wasn't deceiving anyone. And yet often the translators picture him as one who's a deceiver, a supplanter, one who could manipulate the things around so he could get the benefit. Well, I don't see much benefit that Jacob got. He was basically kicked out of the land and was brought back to his father's place, back out of the country. It's not much of a reward there. And the thing that also that Esau negated was he was supposed to be the one that married Leah. Oh, what did he do? He married two Canaanite women of the sons of Heath. Sounds like that's a familiar family. This is where Abraham bought the cave and the field for Sarah's burial place. And it ultimately was his burial place. And then later on it was Jacob's burial place. In Genesis 31:20, and Jacob stole away unawares. This is the King James. And it says, to Laban the Syrian, in that he told him not that he had fled. Now it says stole away. Now this word is yada, stole away. A primitive root to know properly, to ascertain by seeing, using a great variety of senses, figuratively, literally, euphemistically, and in including observation, care, recognition, causality, acknowledge, acquaintance, acquainted, advise, answer, appoint. It doesn't really say much about being stolen away, but this is an idea of that he used stealth to get away because he saw what was going on. God told him to leave and he left that very night, which brings us to this point. When God tells you to do something, do it now. Don't wait because you don't know your very life and your family's life and those who you care about the most are going to pay the price for you not paying attention to what God is saying today at this very minute. And unawares, stole away unawares. And it says in other translations, he deceived him by not telling him. Well, since if I don't tell you something, that's a deceit. No, that I was trying to act according to the way you act towards me. If I feel that you're threatening me in my life, am I going to say, hey, I'm leaving, and then you turn around and kill me? Does that make any sense? So he stole away unawares, and this word unawares is leb, heart. The word for heart. I heard about this. I was listening to somebody today and we're talking about this very verse. The heart of the issue was Laban was deceiving Jacob on every single thing, changed his wages 10 times when he says, oh, you can have all the striped goats. Oh, you can have all the speckled ones. Oh, you can have this one and that one. But then when it ultimately came down to it, when he found Jacob 7 days later, after he fled, all these are mine. He was going to claim it all. So he treated Jacob like a slave. Because when a slave decides, somebody who is a slave, a Hebrew slave, at the end of the time of service, they're let go. And if they marry, if the owner says, okay, I'll give you a wife, I'll let you have children. But when he leaves all by himself. In fact, that's what the thing about Jacob was saying, that if I told you, you would have taken everything away from him. I would have left empty handed. So he was being this, he was in Laban's mind, he had a greedy eye towards the things of Abraham. Because when Abraham was looking for a wife for Isaac, he brought them gifts and everything like that. And Laban saw that Rebecca's brother saw all these things that the servant of Abraham had and said, oh, that family's going to come and they may take a wife from one of my daughters and I'm going to get money from them too. He had an evil eye towards Abraham's family. So when Jacob came, according to Jasher, Isaac gave him gold and silver and told him to go to Laban's house and get a wife from them because he knew that he would probably need some money to show a dowry for the bride price. But Esau sent somebody after him and he gave him all the money. Jacob gave him all the money in exchange for his life. He ransomed his life for all the stuff that he had, so that he could go and continue on the journey that his father sent him on. So when he showed up to Laban's house, he had nothing in his possession to give for the bride price. So here's Laban saying, well, you're a relative of mine. Why not? Why should you work for me for nothing? Tell me what you want and I'll make sure you get it. So he said, well, I'll work for your daughter, Rachel, for 7 years. And that was agreed on, and he did that, and that was met. And then Laban said, I can get another 7 years out of this guy because he loves my daughter Rachel. He could care nothing for my daughter Leah, but he wanted Rachel, so he's going to make him pay double for the price of the bride. In this verse, Esau was cast with a favorable light. All throughout this, all these passages between last Torah portion and this one, and I'm convinced that even today, after reading other passages in the Brit Hadashah, that the translators did not translate the words. They interpreted it for what they want you to believe out of what they want you to believe out of the scriptures, that God is mean, vengeful God. You're not to listen to this God of the Old Testament, that the Jews, the Jewish people in general, the tribe of Judah, are evil and wicked because of the way they translated the words. They interpret the words with their own doctrinal beliefs and put it into the scriptures so that it comes away with, oh, it's a negative thought. Why should I listen to these people? Why should I do anything with them? Because they treated the Messiah poorly. They condemned the whole race, the whole tribe of Judah, because of what a few people did to Yeshua. Yes, he had to die to pay the price for the transgression we did at the golden calf, all the way back to the time of Genesis chapter 15, where the two walked through the pieces of Abraham's offering to them. They cut the covenant, and Abraham had nothing to do with it. It was the flaming torch and the smoldering fire part. God the Father and God Yeshua walked through and said, well, when they violate this, I will die for them. He died for us so that we could be brought back to the kingdom, because he's restoring the kingdom on this earth, as he did in Genesis, the first four chapters of Genesis, saying that he gave it all over to Adam to rule and to reign, and everybody was going to be subjugated to the kingdom laws and Hasatan had a different idea. He changed the meaning in dates and times and seasons to deceive the people so that they would not know and recognize the time of his coming. So when he came and he approached on a donkey, oh, they were ready because David had him rehearsing this for generations on what to do. They didn't recognize who he was. Some of them did, but most of them thought he was going to be a military leader coming on a horse. And yet he came on a donkey because they said with their own traditions that if we are righteous, he'll come on a horse. If we're unrighteous, we'll come on a donkey. Well, he came on a donkey and they didn't like that idea. And they killed him. We killed him because he had to die so that we could be brought back into the kingdom. And when he resurrected, all of us came back under, all of us who believe in him and who serve him come back and the kingdom's restored through him. And when he comes back on some future date, we'll all be able to enter in. All of us who believe in him, all of us who believe and are born again are going to be able to come back in under his kingship, and we'll love him for that. So all this boils down to is this. We have to be careful how we handle the translations. I've been asked many times throughout the time I've been studying scriptures, which is the best version? Well, there is none. There's none one better than the other. They all mishandled the scriptures. We have to go back to the original roots, back to the original meanings, all the way from Genesis to Revelation to figure out what he said to begin with. And as long as they keep mishandling these words and mistranslating and interpreting according to our doctrinal positions, we're going to keep coming up with this mess that we're in. And if as long as we're doing this, we're going to miss the point. And when he finally comes, we're not going to even know it. It's going to be too late. We're going to be those who mourn for him because we pierced him in his side. So now, no, I'm merely showing you the unpleasant light. And Esau, actually, Jacob was shown in an unpleasant light where Esau was shown in a favorable light. In reality, it was Esau who despised his birthright. It was Jacob who was a spiritual leader of the house. In fact, is Jacob was preparing the morning stew, the ritual mourning, for Isaac after Abraham's death. In these passages presented, we saw that in almost every place a word was given as to describe Jacob, the translators consistently painted Jacob in a bad light. It seems as if they wanted to cast this blame for Esau's attitude on Jacob. When considering the facts, Esau is the reason we have so much trouble in the world today. Everywhere there is trouble in the world, it can be boiled down to this, and that is a war between the sons of Esau and the sons of Jacob. In conclusion, praise be to his matchless name. He deals with this to be final resolution when Yeshua returns and the Edomites are dealt with at that time. Nonetheless, Esau has been cast in a good light by the translators and the ruling Jews who have brought us into this Edomite tactic to accuse the other guy of what they did. Esau cared nothing about his firstborn status. In fact, he despised the birthright. He wanted the blessing, but none of the responsibility that went along with it. This tactic goes on even today. In certain parties in the political system, they blame the other guy for the same thing that they're doing. And the other guy had nothing. They may be doing it, but there's no physical proof that they're doing it. Esau is alive and well, and unfortunately, Jacob is not seeing this clearly enough to understand what is even going on today. So we have to constantly be on guard for the mishandling of the scriptures, that we don't do the same thing. And we are following what Yeshua said to do, to diligently search out the things in the scriptures to prove that what he's saying is true. Everything he said, everything he did in the New Testament is, you can find it in the Old Testament. Every single thing. In fact, when he cleared out the temple because of the money changers, that is out of Isaiah. He says, my house will be called a house of prayer. and you made it into a den of robbers and thieves. We cannot keep doing this. We have to repent for what we've done, and we have to get right with Yeshua and get right in the mindset of the kingdom and not of this world. That's all I have.